These omens don't bode well, Mother. Mankind may be facing its darkest hour.
Then mankind will have to face it alone.
How can you say that?
Whatever happens beyond these shores is not our concern.
I am Diana, Princess of the Amazons.
Beasts invade our home and defile it with their presence. Enjoy your trip back to hell.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Wonder Woman, Princess of the Amazons. I am your host, Andrew Pinkham. And before we get started, I wanted to issue everybody a sincerest apology that I have been gone so long. I mean, and let's be honest, I really don't have a real great excuse for being gone 4 years.
It's
kind of a really long hiatus to take. Yeah, shut up. But this podcast hasn't been too far from my mind. It's just I've gotten really busy and haven't been able to podcast, but enough about that. Needless to say, I'm back and putting this show out on a very regular basis. I'm going to try and go weekly, but we'll see how that goes. But we're here to talk about this new Wonder Woman movie that just came out this past weekend. And to help me do that, I have decided to bring on a guest, which would be a first for this show. If you've listened to any of my podcasts at all, this person has been a frequent guest on all of my shows. He's a staff writer at DC Comics News, as well as the host for the now-defunct Carousel podcast. The man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Danny Saab. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm assuming when you do this in post afterwards, you have some sort of wicked intro music, right, to bring me in? I'm assuming so. Then like a Darth Vader. Dun, 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 dun. That'd be super.
Hey, that's not a bad idea,
if you
actually
could do that, that'd be great.
I think I could manage that.
And I take assault the fact that you said a defunct Carousel podcast. It is not defunct. It is completed. Perfection.
It could still continue on. I mean, there's still Supergirl comics to talk about.
There is, but I mean, the Carousel podcast wrapped up the new 52 of DC Comics, and that's what it did. And, you know, if I do decide to start another Supergirl podcast, it'll be called something else. You know, something maybe with the name Supergirl entitled. I haven't decided yet.
Okay, so maybe defunct is the wrong word. What word would you choose to use? Ended? Now, ended Carousel podcast?
The completed? No. Completed, I guess. Let's go completed.
Completed Carousel podcast.
I'll think of one, and then by the end of the show, if it comes up with something different, I'll let you know.
Fair enough.
There you go.
Dude, it has been so long since we have sat down to record anything.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I mean, both of us haven't really been podcasting at all.
No, not really.
So that could be the reason why. But, no, I mean, after the Carousel podcast, at least for myself, after it ended, I haven't really been doing much podcasting. I mean, still been reading comic books here and there, but haven't really been doing much podcasting lately. As you mentioned, I am a writer at DC Comics. Pause. News. that's what you did. I was just laughing at that one. But I'm a writer at DC Comics News. I write reviews for Green Lantern, Suicide Squad, Teen Titans, Supergirl, of course. And so I'm enjoying all those books. But, no, I've really been meaning to get back into podcasting again. So, unlike you, I watched Wonder Woman. Absolutely loved it. And, you know, I figured what better time to come on your show and to talk about this amazing movie.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's hop into some Wonder Woman news. I first wanted to talk about kind of what was the net total, how much this movie made in the first weekend alone. Mind you, this thing had a budget of $150 million, which is an obscene amount of money for for any movie to begin with, but I mean, it also broke records for being a movie with this size of a budget with a female director. I'm not sure why that is, but in the first weekend, this movie made a total of $223 million worldwide. That is a staggering number. I mean, they've already made back their budget in leaps and bounds. What are your thoughts on this, buddy?
Oh, no, I agree with you. I mean, they did incredibly well in terms of money. I think it came out to, if I remember correctly, I think it was 16th overall among comic book movies in terms of opening weekend sales, I think it was. Maybe, yep. Yeah, I think that's what it was, 16th overall.
It actually nabbed the top spot over, believe it or not, 50 Shades of Grey. Back in February 2015. And before that, Twilight.
I'm not surprised there.
Which are two movies I would never thought I would hear on a Wonder Woman podcast.
At least in 50 Shades of Grey, you know, like Wonder Woman, I'm sure there's a lasso that can be used.
Wow.
I'm just saying. So wow. At least there's that connection, right? And Twilight is just, yeah, whatever. Twilight is just
sparkly vampire crap.
Yeah, there's no vampires in Wonder Woman. Well, no, Ares? No, he's not a vampire.
There could be.
Also, I think
Ares could raise the dead, could he not?
Yeah, I guess he could. You're right. He could. That is very true. But no, I'm not surprised it made as much money. I'm surprised it actually didn't make more money, to be honest with you, with how good it was. But I think a lot of people maybe were still a little tentative just because of how, I don't say mediocre, but how average maybe, Batman vs. Superman was and Suicide Squad.
I don't think mediocre is the right word.
I said average. I didn't say mediocre. I said average. I think a lot of people wanted to wait.
I don't even think average is the right word. I think disappointment was abound with Batman vs. Superman. And I think that has a lot to do with the director.
Okay.
And the writing staff. I mean,
yeah.
Frick, if the director for this film, I mean, if Patty Jenkins directed Batman vs. Superman, I think we would have gotten a whole lot better of a movie.
You know what? Here's
my humble opinion.
Here's the thing with Batman vs. Superman is that it wasn't a bad movie. I don't know if you watched the extended version. Did you watch the extended version of it?
I did watch
the extended version was actually so much better than the actual theatrical version because they left a lot of parts in, which actually made the movie make a lot more sense, I found.
Yeah, and plus we got the line from, I think, Superman turning to Batman and say, "Is she with you?" You know, that whole interchange between the three of them.
Right. I don't know if that was in the theatrical version. I can't remember.
It was not in the theatrical version because I was waiting for it. And that's the one thing that they cut out that really disappointed me.
Did they? I honestly don't remember if they did or not.
And I was so glad that they added it back in the extended cut.
Oh, well, there you go. But, no, as I was saying, so Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad, they were good movies, don't get me wrong, but they were received with mixed reviews from fans and from critics alike. So I think when Wonder Woman came out, I think, and with Wonder Woman, they threw so much promotion behind it. I think they threw more promotion behind this movie than they ever did for the other two, personally. And so when this one came out, I think a lot of people were on the fence and maybe wanted to wait and to see how the reviews came out first before they went to go see it. Well, lo and behold, the reviews were fantastic. So I'm thinking, even though the initial opening weekend wasn't maybe as good as the other two movies, I think its longevity in terms of how long it stays in theaters and how much money it's going to make will make more than the other two will.
I mean, $223 million worldwide in the first weekend is nothing to shake a stick at, though, dude.
It's lunch money. It's lunch money, let's be honest.
It's lunch money.
They can do better.
Well, and plus the fact that it has a freaking 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is astounding to me, considering both Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman both have a splat rating. And I think last time I checked, Man of Steel is like below a 30%, which is really bad. I think it's a little harsh, to be honest. And Batman vs. Superman is a lot better with the extended cut, like you just said. So
okay.
I don't know what their I haven't checked the ratings for both either Man of Steel or Batman v Superman.
They're not as high as Wonder Woman.
Nowhere
that I know for a fact.
Near Wonder Woman. I mean, Wonder Woman has hit the freaking stratosphere as far as the Rotten Tomatoes rating.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Which thrills me to death because I remember when Man of Steel came out. Look, the night before I went and saw it, I looked at the rating and saw the splat rating, and I was super disappointed because, I mean, Superman is my favorite superhero. So, and for his movie to come out, I mean, the beginning of this DC expanded universe to get a splat rating was super disappointing, but I am so glad that our very first foray into a female superhero on the big screen, we get a freaking 94%.
Well, it's not the first time we've had a female superhero on the big screen, though, right? It's the first time it's been this good, but it's not the first time. I mean, the last one I think what we had was, I want to say, Catwoman? Halle Berry?
That doesn't really count, though.
Sure, of course it does. What about Elektra?
No, it doesn't.
Elektra.
Okay, fair enough. Any
Supergirl.
All right. Supergirl was not... Well, that was back in 1984, so...
It's okay, dude. Just accept the fact that I just corrected you on your own podcast. Oh, don't worry about it. Just accept it and move on.
Wow. Okay, you're right.
I think what the kids call it, schooled you. But don't worry about it.
I stand corrected.
Of course.
Wow, you come onto my show and you diss me in front of all my listeners.
Well, I'm sure the two listeners
very
won't mind.
Much. Anyways. Wow, seriously? Now you're insulting my audience.
I love your audience. They're great.
Wow.
I've had lots of fun on the Superman Family podcast you've done before. It's lots of fun.
Wow. You just can't help yourself, can you?
No, I cannot. No, I cannot.
Wow. Anyways, what were we talking about?
Wonder Woman. General. We were talking about. You said that it was the first time a female-led superhero on the big screen and how well it did. And I told you it wasn't the first time, but it is the first time it's done this well. Yes.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Yep. Yeah. But I think, I mean, besides Catwoman, I mean, DC really hasn't been brave enough to put a DC female superhero out there and expect it to do well. And I really thought that coming in, I thought everybody expected this film to do well.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I mean, the trailers looked amazing, and I just didn't see this movie being a flop. And I was right, and I couldn't be happier about that as a Wonder Woman fan.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the story, the cinematics behind it was just, the music was just amazing. Everything from this movie was top-notch all the way through. I mean,
and we got an introduction to her theme in Batman vs. Superman, which is great, by the way.
I believe we did, yeah.
I mean, that piece of music is phenomenal by, what's his face? I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Wow. Okay. Moving on. Anyway, you were saying?
Okay.
I can't think of the dude's name.
The person who put together the music behind the movie?
The score for Batman vs. Superman.
Let me see. The score, music by Rupert Grayson Williams.
No, not him.
Well, he's the one who put the score together, the music, yeah.
For Batman vs. Superman?
Oh, Batman vs. Superman. I thought he meant Wonder Woman. He's the one who put together Wonder Woman, so I imagine he came up with the one for
Hans,
that one, too.
Hans Zimmer.
Oh, okay.
I think he probably collaborated with Hans Zimmer for her actual score.
Or her
actual theme, I should say. I mean, you could actually hear it when she was fighting Ares, which was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we'll get into that a little bit later when we talk about the actual flick.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently the top six Wonder Woman stories to read after you've watched the movie, according to EW.com, which I don't know is reliable or not, but, goes from 1 to 6, and the first one is Wonder Woman Volume 1, The Lies.
I have not read that.
Wonder Woman Volume 2, Year 1.
I've been meaning to read it, but I have not.
The Legend of Wonder Woman Volume 1, Origins.
I've actually read a little bit of that. Because I think it was a digital first, if I remember correctly. So
yep.
I think I read the first 3 to 4 issues digitally,
yep.
And that's about it. It was good. I just didn't get a chance to read them all in a row. That's all.
Yeah. Wonder Woman, The Golden Age Omnibus, Volume 1.
I have not.
Neither have I. Wonder Woman by George Perez, Volume 1.
Have not.
I have. George Perez is freaking amazing.
Yes, he is.
And Wonder Woman, Earth 1.
Have not.
I have. Also amazing. So out of the 6, both of us have probably read maybe 2 of the 6.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad, honestly.
Well, I mean, in my defense, I mean, I just recently
I am a fairly new comic book reader,
right? So, and not to mention, I'm more of a Supergirl fan than Wonder Woman. Not that I'm not a huge Wonder Woman fan, especially after this movie, but, you know, it's just not one that I did read some of the New 52 when I got into comic books, 5 years ago, whatever it was. So that's when I started reading a lot of the New 52 books, and Wonder Woman is one of them, and I started reading it. But because of the... I didn't like the artwork that much in that book, and the story didn't appeal to me, so I think I stopped. I think after a few issues, but you know, it's one of those things where like the New 52, like a lot of the books in New 52 that I started reading and then dropped, they just weren't that good after a while. So
yep.
That's all.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Yeah, I mean, out of everything, I think probably. I mean, I have not read the Golden Age Omnibus. I haven't really read any Golden Age Wonder Woman. I want to really bad, but I just haven't been able to pick up that Omnibus because, for one, it's really expensive, and I can't seem to find it in the comic book stores when I go. So, and because I live so far away from a comic shop, it's kind of hard to find. So, but anything by George Perez is comic gold, especially his Wonder Woman is my favorite version of the character. And Earth One was a really great story. My wife got it for me for a Valentine's Day gift, and it was an amazing, amazing volume. Great graphic novel. I would highly recommend it to anybody. I've not read The Lies or Year One or Origins, so... I have some reading to do, obviously, but moving on to what I find would be a very interesting cameo in the sequel is the director's actually vying for Linda Carter to appear in the Wonder Woman sequel when they do eventually do one.
Uh-huh.
What are your thoughts on this, buddy? Would you like to see it? Would you not like to see it?
I was surprised she wasn't the first one in the original, like in the one that just came out now. But it really doesn't matter to me one way or another if she's in or not.
Right.
I mean, it's one of those things. I know that Supergirl's been doing that a lot lately. The TV show where they're bringing some of its, you know, they brought in Laura Vandervoort and it brought in Helen Slater and you know, some of these. You know, Dean Cain as well, too. Like, some of the past kind of Supergirl actors who've been on, let's say, Smallville, whatever the case may be. But, I mean, to me, it doesn't really matter. I mean, if they bring in old ones or not, it doesn't really make a difference to me, to be honest with you. I mean, it'd be interesting,
right.
But depending on the role that she's going to play in the movie. But, nah, it doesn't really matter one way or another, to be honest with you.
Well, what really surprised me is she's kind of the perfect age for the character of Hippolyta. So I'm not really – I'm a little unsure as to why they didn't tap her to play Hippolyta in the actual film. I mean, Hippolyta doesn't have a huge role, but, I mean, Hippolyta was the very first Wonder Woman. So I'm a little surprised that wasn't, you know, a part of the creative process and bringing Linda Carter in to play that role, but – then again,
She might have been too old for that role. I mean, I think the actress...
Could have been, yeah.
I think the actress played Hapala, I think it's Connie Nielsen, I think was a little bit younger. I mean, well, born in 1965, so she's still up there, but I mean... Yeah, no, I was fine with the casting they did. I mean, like I said, I'm not sure what role they would bring in Linda Carter if they were to bring her in, but like I said, it doesn't matter to me which one way or another if she was in the movie or not, to be honest with you.
Sure. No, I get it. Moving on to some current DC Comics news, the solicit for Wonder Woman Steve Trevor special that just came out today, June 7th, the story by Tim Seeley, art by Christian Deuce, the colors by Alan Passalacqua, letters by Josh Reed, cover by Paul Renaud and Yannick Paquette. Have you read this yet, sir?
I have not, no.
You have not?
I have not read it.
I'm going to read the little synopsis that DC provided. When Wonder Woman saves Steve Trevor from dying on the shores of Themyscira, his life and hers change forever. In this special issue, learn more about the tumultuous partnership these two have had over the years and get a hint at where it's going in the future. Have these two finally admitted they're meant for each other, or do the fates have other ideas? Interesting volume. It almost sounds like a romance novel.
Sort of. It's almost like an origin story, I guess. It's just another origin story for Wonder Woman.
It might be an origin story for Steve Trevor.
Hmm. Or for both, and like you were saying, it's probably like a romance novel, and it's just it's an origin story of their unfathered relationship or something like that, you know?
Wow. Okay, somebody's calling you, sir.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's not from my side.
Yeah, it totally was.
No.
Anyway. are you gonna pick this up, or are you gonna read it?
Read what? Oh, that book?
You're going to read this book.
Maybe. I might read it. I'm not sure. I mean, there's a few other books I'd rather read, I think, first. But, I mean, if it was Wonder Woman straight... I mean, this is just a one-shot, I'm assuming, right? It's not a...
I would imagine that it's a one-shot. I mean, it does say special, so...
Well, if it's a one-shot, I might just read it then. Just to see what it's about, but... Yeah.
Or just
check out some reviews, and if the reviews look good, then yeah, I'll probably pick up and read it.
Cool. Hmm? Very good. Well, I think that's everything that I had for news. We're going to take a quick break, play a promo for another podcast, and when we come back, we're going to dive into this head-on, full-on spoilers. So if you have yet to have seen the Wonder Woman movie, this will probably be, and you want to avoid spoilers, this will probably be where you're going to have to just wait or fast-forward through, like, another 30 to 40 minutes. But you could always come back and listen to what we had to say about the Wonder Woman film and not be spoiled. So you have fair warning.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll be right back, everybody.
Are you willing to follow me on a journey and risk getting lost in the swirling maze of past ages, protected only by our red indestructible capes as we break through the final unexplored realm of the time barrier to explore the fantastic Silver Age adventures of the world's greatest hero, Superman? If so, join me each week on the Superman Fan Podcast, as together we'll follow the Man of Steel, his cousin Supergirl, and his closest friends, Perry White, Lois Lane, Jimmy Olsen, Lana Lang, Batman and Robin, and others in Superman's never-ending quest to defend truth and justice in the pages of Action Comics, Superman, World's Finest Comics, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, and Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane. Go to the SupermanFanPodcast.blogspot.com, available on iTunes and most other podcast aggregators. You can also follow the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Medium, Flipboard, and Stitcher. And after you listen, feel free to send email to supermanfanpodcast@gmail.com And unless you request otherwise, I look forward to reading your comments on future episodes. And don't forget to wear your red indestructible cape, standard safety equipment for traveling through the time barrier.
And welcome back, everybody. Getting into the actual film, what was your initial reaction coming out of the theater, man?
My initial reaction, I mean, I'll say I loved it like everybody else, but I think what took my breath away, what kind of makes me want to go watch it again, and I plan to probably next week, is just the sheer cinematics of it, especially that part, No Man's Land. Was probably to me one of the best scenes or best parts of any film I've ever watched. It was just so powerful and cinematically so beautiful to watch. It was just amazing. And, I mean, it's not just, I mean, the director did a great job, but, I mean, the cinematographer on this film did such a fantastic job as well, too. And the camera angles they chose and the sound was just all perfectly together. So that to me is what when I walked out of the theater, I was like, holy crap, that was amazeballs. That was so good. And that's kind of what took my breath away a little bit. So
I'm going to read a message you sent to me over Messenger. Holy friggin' crap, that was awesome.
That doesn't sound like me.
Those were your exact words, sir.
I'm much more polite than that. I never swear on Messenger. Psh, tish tosh. I think I was hacked. But, I mean, I came out of theaters like, that was amazing. And I looked at my girlfriend, I was like, what do you think? She's like, it's okay. Like,
wow, really?
She liked it, but I mean, she's not a big movie person, right? So she's
oh, really?
Yeah. So she said, it was good. It was really good. It's like, okay. Hold on a second. Andrew's awesome. I had to discuss it with somebody who could appreciate the magnitude of this film, you know?
You know I'm going to bleep you out, right?
Why? What did I do? Did I swear?
This is a family-friendly show, sir.
Oh, pish tosh. I didn't even swear, man.
Yeah, you did. You dropped the F-bomb, sir.
Just beep it out.
That's what I plan on doing.
Well, in that case, I can say a lot more then. get my money's worth then, right?
Yeah, it'll be like 2 or 3 minutes and nothing but beeps.
Sweet. Oh man, I'm gonna make you earn this one. That's for damn sure.
Apparently.
All right. What about you? What did you left the theater? I'm assuming. And what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I am sitting here talking to you about it, so I did leave the theater at some point.
Possibly.
My initial reaction. I mean, I turned to my wife after the movie was over, and I was just blown away. You know, my first thought was, wow, that was awesome. And when can I see this thing again? The way they portrayed Diana, I mean, right from the start was excellent. I mean, there were some things that I was really surprised that they chose to do, which I'm really, really glad that they did. I mean, they chose to give the George Perez backstory with Hippolyta making her as clay and the gods bringing her to life and all that. It was straight from the comics. I just wish they had shown it instead. But, I mean, I was just thrilled with every part of the movie. It did get a little slow for me towards the middle, but it picked right back up once we got into some action. And you're right, that moment where she's crossing No Man's Land, just deflecting bullets like a freaking pro, like, I mean, she never deflected bullets until she went to Man's World, so...
Yeah,
I mean, the fact that she can deflect bullets right out of the gate was amazing.
I think the only thing that would have made that scene better is if she caught a bullet in her teeth and then spit it out. That would have been so badass.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah.
It would have been awesome.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I mean, swinging that sword and shield, like, like nobody's business. I mean, it was just awesome. I could not get over how, like you said, I mean, how well the cinematography was shot. The director did an amazing job. I mean, you can definitely tell Gal Gadot was having a blast playing this role. I just couldn't get over how great this flick was. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
So let me ask you a question.
True.
And this is something I just came up with off the top of my head. But Chris Pine, who played Steve Trevor, do you think the movie would have been as good if they picked anybody else to pick that role? Or do you think Chris Pine just totally nailed it, like knocked out of the park as Steve Trevor?
I think the inclusion of Steve Trevor, it could have been anybody in that role, and the movie still would have been just as strong. I don't think Chris Pine is like one of those actors who, I mean, the only roles you really recognize him from, let's be honest, are the Star Trek movies. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that he has played in besides the Star Trek franchise that he's actually recognizable in. So, and I do believe that if they picked anybody else, I think the movie still would have been just as strong.
I don't know. I think I kind of disagree with that because, yes, he's most recognizable for Star Trek, but, I mean, he has done other movies, like movies I've seen him in. But I think it's his kind of humor that he brought, because he's kind of a funny guy, but I think it's just the humor that he brought to this role as Steve Trevor and the chemistry he had with Gal Gadot, I think, is what made this movie even better. You know, especially at the beginning when they didn't know each other, they were getting to know each other, that sort of thing. And for some reason, that scene where Chris Pine's in that tub, and he kind of gets out, and then Gal Gadot come walks in, and she sees him like all naked and all that stuff, and he's kind of hide, and they're just kind of going back and forth with quips and talking and that sort of thing. I mean, I think it's their sheer chemistry they had together that made it that much better. And I don't know if he had anybody else in that role. Like I was talking about Gal Gadot, how she made an amazing Wonder Woman, she did, but I don't think enough people are talking about Chris Pine and how he did as Steve Trevor. I think he did a great job as Steve Trevor, and I think if it was anybody else, I don't think it would have been as good. It still would have been a good movie, but not as good. So, that's my thought, at least.
Okay. What are some of what are some of your other favorite parts of this film, sir?
Like I said, I love No Man's Land. To me, that stands out the most. The ending with Ares, and now this. Remember, I told you when I left the movie, and I mentioned there were a couple things. There were like one or two things in this movie I actually didn't like, and
okay.
You found that so hard to believe, but it's true. There was one or two things that kind of I think they could have made better, and to me, Ares was one of them.
Okay,
I think
is it the actor?
It's the actor and the costume, both of them. I thought the costume looked like tinfoil. And unfortunately, when I left the movie, because it was kind of at the end of the movie, that's what I was thinking about. I wasn't thinking about No Man's Land. I wasn't thinking about anything else but that part. And it sucked because it was such a beautiful, amazing movie all the way through. But that, when I left the film, that's what I was thinking. It's like, they could have done so much better with Ares. Like, make him bigger, you know, larger than life. You know what I mean? Like, this stuff, you're talking about the God of War here. I mean, make him huge. Make him, like, amazing, you know? And I think they could have done so much better. I mean, they spent so much money creating Doomsday and Batman v Superman. They could have used some of that talent and money or whatever to make a much better version of Ares. And even the old man who played, I say old man because he looked like an old man, but the character who played Ares, and for love me, I was looking through IMDb trying to find his name. I cannot find my IMDb. So maybe they purposely left him out just so they don't ruin the movie, or maybe I just couldn't find him. I'm not sure. But not to say he's not a good actor, but I just don't think he was the right role for Ares, personally. I thought the guy who played Lindendorf, Danny Huston, I think the audience, at least the theater I was in, thought he was Ares. Until the very end, right? But the thing is,
I think everybody did.
The thing is, he looked like Ares. You know, I mean, he made a much more controlling, much more menacing Ares than the other one did. But I get why they did that. It's basically to throw people off or throw the audience off to think, because he looks a certain type, this has to be Ares. You wouldn't think of the other one is. So that makes sense to me. But if you're going to make the other one Ares, which is fine, but at least when he, you know, forms into that God of War character, make him look menacing. And I just don't think they did that very well.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think they could have done a better job with Ares. There, I mean, I guess we can get into some of the stuff that we didn't overly care for. I don't like the fact that we don't get to see Diana imbued with her power. Because, I mean, in the comics, she's supposed to be able to fly, has several other different powers from the actual gods. And the fact that the gods apparently are dead doesn't really flow with me. I don't like that at all. I mean, Wonder Woman is one of those characters who gets, I mean, she's supposed to be the goddess of truth. I mean, she's supposed to be a god, and she is, obviously, because she killed Ares. So, I mean, she is credited as being a god, but I don't know. It's just the fact that the Greek gods are dead and killed by Ares. It just doesn't, I don't know, it, just something about it that I didn't like. And, I mean, maybe that's just my history with the character of Wonder Woman. They pulled a lot from the George Perez series. The fact that she was made of clay and given life by the gods, but not necessarily imbued with their power. I didn't see any evidence of that until the tail end of the movie. So, and really it's unknown what powers she actually has. So, I mean, that was one thing I didn't really care for.
Okay. I mean, I get that. I mean, to me, the only thing I think I would have liked to have seen, and only because from what I understand, it's been in so many other origin stories of Wonder Woman that I've read or that I've watched in terms of media and stuff like that. But, you know, when Steve Trevor comes on the island and the Amazons capture him, well, there has to be a contest. Someone has to go and bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this case, there was no contest, right?
No,
Diana
there wasn't.
Diana just decided to take all the gear and to take a boat and get out of there, right?
Yep.
So I would have liked to have seen a contest in terms of her, so we can actually see her in terms of her abilities and stuff like that a little more. I mean, not that we didn't get a lot of that anyways, but I mean, it would have been cool anyways. And then just to show her mom that, hey, you know, I can do this, you know, that sort of thing, and really become an Amazon that way, because she really never became an Amazon. She never went through her trials, at least not that I know of. So that's the only thing that I thought that was missing. Also, back to what you were saying about her origin story, they actually took a lot of, I think, the origin story from the New 52 as well, in terms of Zeus being her father, because that's from the New 52 series.
Yeah, that's probably what I didn't like the most.
I didn't mind it. I mean, to be honest, I was fine with it. It didn't really bother me, but it was kind of, and this just goes back to another thing, that it was kind of predictable where her mom mentioned, Hippolyta. Thank you. Mentioned about the sword that can kill any god, but only, you know, the sword is what kills any god. Well, I don't know, maybe I was the only one who figured this out, but obviously as soon as she said that, it's like, that's bullshit. Diana's the one who killed any god. I had the feeling that's what was, that, like, I don't want to say it was kind of predictable. Maybe you, I don't know if you knew that or not, or if you kind of thought that as soon as you heard that too, but I kind of felt that way, maybe.
Yeah.
I've read enough Wonder Woman to know, and I've seen enough Wonder Woman to know how it plays out. So.
Yeah, I kind of felt that Wonder Woman was the only person who could wield that sword.
Exactly.
Because of her powers and stuff.
Right, right. And another thing I didn't like about the movie is the fact that it led to a kick-ass fighting scene, don't get me wrong, but is when the Germans had basically found their island and came onto their island, because that wasn't, if I remember correctly in the comics, nobody ever found their island, ever.
Right.
So the fact that they found it, you know, just by accident or whatever, I don't know. I don't really care about that scene either way. I mean, it was like I said, it led to a great fighting scene, but
right.
I think it would have kept a lot more mystery of the island if they didn't see it, if they didn't find it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe it's just me. I don't know.
No, I agree. What are some other things that you didn't care for, sir? Or was it just that mainly?
Besides Diana not catching a bullet in her teeth in No Man's Land, the fact that I'm not in the movie myself, as Steve Trevor, no, that's pretty much it. I think they're minor things, to be honest. The overall, I love the movie. So, yeah. You know what? It's one of those things where I left the theater and I didn't even care about all the other stuff that I didn't like, because the stuff that I did love and I did like about the movie just surpassed them.
Yeah.
So,
no, I'm right there with you. I had a lot more things that I loved about it than what I didn't. I felt that they meshed every version of Wonder Woman very, very well. I mean, you can see a little bit of all the different iterations. I kind of was waiting, though, honestly, for the, I don't know, whether it be the cameo or like a mention of Wonder Woman's invisible plane. That would have probably been the only thing that I kind of would have kind of chuckled
Wait,
at.
Wait a minute, you didn't see her invisible plane in the movie? I saw it.
No.
I saw the invisible plane.
There was no invisible plane.
It's invisible. I saw it.
Sure.
Just saying. You didn't see it? It's right there. It's so obvious.
Yeah. But I would have liked to have mentioned about something about the invisible plane.
Well, I mean, we'll probably get that in the sequel.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, there's still...
It'd be really awesome if they did.
Though, I really hope... Like, I don't know who they're planning to put in the sequel as the... antagonist, but I hope it's Cheetah, to be honest with you. But
that would be great.
We'll see. Actually, speaking of this movie, there was actually, I don't know if you noticed, did you notice that Zack Snyder actually made an appearance in this film?
Made an appearance in the actual film? No.
He did a cameo.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yep,
no, I didn't notice.
In No Man's Land, he was one of the soldiers in the trenches.
Interesting. No, I didn't notice.
Yeah. Next time you watch it, just look out for him.
Hmm.
Yep, and... what else was I going to say? I can't remember what. Yeah, I noticed too, like, I mean, go back to the New 52 that we were talking about, because like I said, they took the origin story from the New 52 in terms of Zeus being a father, but it's interesting because the fact that it sounds like we're going to be getting a Batgirl movie now too, by Josh Whedon, and from what articles I've read, he's going to take a lot of the... story from that Batgirl movie from the New 52 as well too. So it seems like they're going to the New 52 quite a bit, which is interesting.
I don't understand that though.
Because
Batgirl has such a rich history. Why do they have to go with a version crappy?
I read the Batgirl New 52 at the beginning with Gail Simone writing it. Before it got all kind of campy and you know, after school and special and all that stuff. But it was actually really quite good. Especially the thing with her father, with her brother and stuff like that. It was actually really good. So I'm not sure to what extreme he's going to take from the New 52. But, I mean, it's Josh Whedon. I trust him to do whatever the hell he wants to, you know?
Yeah. Josh Whedon is... I mean, he's taken over control of Justice League, for crying out loud, after Zack Snyder had to step down.
He is, but I mean, not complete control. I mean, after a lot of the movies are already done, he's just basically going to be... From what I understand, actually, I was reading this, there's going to be a lot of reshoots that are going to happen this summer, apparently, for the film. And they've actually added Hipatla and Antiope from Wonder Woman. They're actually going to be in the film now, too.
You mean Antiphony?
Whatever. I said it right. You said it wrong.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But no, both those are going to be in the movie as well, too, apparently now. So, yeah, I guess maybe after the success of Wonder Woman, they decide to maybe change things a little bit. So,
That's
who knows?
Awesome.
But actually, speaking of Wonder Woman, there was one scene that actually made me smile from end to end. It's when Steve Trevor and Diana were in London when they got there. And Diana tastes ice cream for the first time.
Yes, I was going to ask you about this scene.
I love that scene. I just shock about that scene.
Straight from freaking Justice League number 3.
Yes,
it
was
fantastic. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely
yeah.
loved it.
Yeah, I love. Just as soon as I saw it, I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that was
no,
so good.
The whole ice cream scene, it, like you, it made me smile from ear to ear. It's like, I can't believe they used such a reference as that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I'm glad that they did, because it shows Diana's innocence. And she was extremely innocent and naive throughout this entire film, which was great.
Well, she had to be. It was the first time on man's land, right? So
it
makes sense
fun.
That she was.
Yeah, it was fun to see. And I really believe that Gal played it really, really well.
Yes, definitely.
I don't think they could have chosen a better actress to play Wonder Woman. I really don't think they could have. I mean, she just knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, her performance was just amazing. I mean, she did such a good job in Batman vs. Superman. And the fact that she's able to carry her own movie, I mean, just shows the kind of maturity as an actress that she has, and that she's able to carry what's going to be a pretty great film franchise for this character. So I am really looking forward to a sequel for the foreseeable future.
Yes, definitely. No, I think Patty Jenkins and both Gal Gadot as well too. They did such a fantastic job in this movie. I you know, you wonder if you can. You look at it, it's like, okay, how can I make it better and this and that and the other and. Yeah, there were a couple of things as we mentioned before, but overall, man, it was a masterpiece. It was great.
And I mean, my wife actually read an article. She read something with the director saying that she was trying to pull from every version of the character of Wonder Woman, and you can definitely see that. I mean, you see pieces of the New 52, you see pieces of the George Perez.
Mm-hmm.
You see some of the Golden Age.
Yep.
So, I mean, the whole war thing is definitely Golden Age, because that's, I mean, Wonder Woman came onto the scene at the time during World War II. So, I mean, instead they pulled it from World War I instead of World War II, which I was fine with. I mean, if I disliked anything, They're just nitpicky things.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I think this film was phenomenal. Very, very little. I wish we got a more explanation for her powers. We still don't know if she can fly or not. I mean, she's supposed to be able to fly like freaking Superman. So
I think she kind of did. I remember when she was fighting Ares, and this is one thing that kind of confused me a little bit, because maybe it's just me, but so when she's fighting Ares at the end, and you know, Steve Trevor's plane explodes and all that stuff, and she goes absolutely, you know, she goes like very intense, right? And can't be crazy. Maybe it's just the cinematics and the way they were doing it, but she was like running like the Flash. And knocking everybody around. Do you remember that part?
I do, yeah.
So, enough. Last time I checked, she didn't have super speed, does she?
Well, in the comics, Hermes actually imbues her with some of his power.
Oh,
And that's why she can fly. And, as we know, Hermes is the god of speed.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes complete and total sense that she's able to run at super speed. Obviously not as fast as the Flash, but, you know, I mean, I believe she can run as fast as probably Superman could.
I guess. I've just never seen her run fast. Like, I mean, I'm thinking back to the Justice League animated TV show, you know, which I know pretty well, and I don't remember ever her running fast, but maybe it's just me.
Well, I mean, and in the comics, she's imbued with a lot of different gods' power. I mean, she has the wisdom of Athena. She has the speed of Hermes.
Right.
The beauty of Aphrodite.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other different gods have imbued her with a lot of different things.
Sure.
So I just wished we had gotten to see that in, like, either a flashback when she was being brought to life. I mean, and we didn't really see Apollo, we didn't really see Clay Diana being brought to life as a baby.
Right.
So, and I think she doesn't get imbued with her power as an infant. She gets imbued with her power by the gods when she goes to man's world. So, I mean, I think it was a gift from the gods to Diana as a way to survive in man's world, as being the champion of the gods. So, I mean, it's definitely different.
Right.
I'm not going to say one way or the other. I like what they did with Wonder Woman. There were some things I wish they had done differently, but overall it was still a fantastic movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, I just can't complain too much at all. I mean, it's the Wonder Woman film that I had hoped that they would make. What more is there to say about it? So,
right. No, for sure. I mean, it was a great movie, and you know, it's funny too. I was reading an article that that part in No Man's Land actually Warner Brothers actually initially didn't want to do that scene of No Man's Land in the movie, and Patty Jenkins is the one who kind of fought for it, because I mean the powers that be at Warner Brothers didn't understand why it was necessary for the film, and I guess she convinced him that it was, and she got to do it, and thankfully she did, because that by far is probably the best scene in the whole entire movie. But it's just funny how Warner Brothers initially didn't want to do that scene. Which is kind of
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it just goes to show you that Patty Jenkins will push for something that she believes in, you know?
Right.
And the overall tone of feminism, and it's supposed to be a fairly big theme with the character of Wonder Woman, and I understand that. I mean, and I didn't feel like that was shoved down my throat. Or at least not as much, anyway.
I mean, it was obvious, because it was set in World War I, right? So it was obvious, especially when you got onto man's world, you know, how women were looked upon, that sort of thing. But
right.
In terms of feminism, no. I mean, if you did notice, there was pretty much throughout the whole entire movie, and I kind of noticed this a little bit, but through the whole entire movie, for the most part, Chris Pine and Gal Gadot always shared scenes together. There weren't that many where Gal Gadot was by herself. It was mainly with Chris Pine for the most part, which is, I felt kind of weird. I don't know why that was. I mean, there weren't too many scenes where she was by herself. It was with him. So I don't know why. I don't know if it just happened to be in the story that happened to be that way or what the case may be. And they could have easily called this movie, you know, Steve Trevor, to be honest with you. Because he just had as much screen time as Gal Gadot did. But, you know, it was a Wonder Woman film, and that's what people wanted to see. But it's just kind of interesting that they shared a lot of the screen time together, pretty much almost evenly. I mean, I think probably Gal had a bit more, but it was split almost right down the middle, and they shared a lot of scenes together. But no, I didn't find, like you were saying, that feminism was shoved down my throat. As you say, it was subtle. It was there, but it was very subtle. But I think what was more important, the message, was Diana's, was her story, right? And I think that's what took center stage in this movie, as it should. So,
right.
No, I didn't find anything about, I mean, to me, I love heroines. I mean, like I said, Supergirl's one of my favorite characters. So,
right.
To me, a female character has always been more interesting than their male counterparts. So I've never had a problem with that. But no, I never found in this movie that feminism or what have you was shoved down my throat. But I just found it interesting that Chris Pine and Gal Gadot shared the majority of the screen time together.
I do find that interesting. So. And I think it was a big story element because, I mean, Diana was coming from a place just very secluded and away from the world. And I think Steve Trevor was trying to protect her as much as he could, you know, and trying not to get thrown into jail in the process.
Right. That's very true too. Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, as soon as they get to London, that he makes Diana change into something a little bit more presentable than her Wonder Woman costume.
Yeah. That's funny.
So, which was a very funny scene. And Etta Holliday, she was probably one of the brightest spots in the entire film. Mm-hmm. Her comedic relief was awesome. I loved it. I loved every aspect of Etta's character arc. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the stuff within the clothing, the clothing store, I mean, the 226 dresses, whatever. It was just a really funny line. I mean, she was definitely there for comedic relief to the point where Diana hands her sword and shield, and she looks at Steve, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Oh, hilarious. Just really, really a lot of funny moments. Humor peppered throughout this entire film. I loved it. It doesn't take itself too seriously, much like Batman vs. Superman or Man of Steel. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what has been missing in these DC films. I think Superman took itself too seriously.
Right.
And I think Batman vs. Superman took itself way too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I think it's this whole idea of let's make a realistic world, much like they did with Chris Nolan's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Nolan's Batman does not fit into an expanded universe type situation. I don't believe.
I don't think so either now.
So, and I'm getting really tired of this whole realism and superhero movie crap.
You know what? Think about Batman v Superman, and one thing you said, and it's true, the one thing it really missed was humor, was I thought heart, you know. I thought that was the biggest thing that was missing in Batman v Superman, besides a lot of the editing issues that they were having. I think it just didn't flow very well, especially the theatrical version. But those things weren't in that movie, they were in abundance in this one, in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made this one so much better, was the fact that, you know, everything flowed well, and you had great comedy. And like I said, I think Chris Pine was a great addition as Steve Trevor in this film, and I don't think anybody else could have done it better because of his humor, because he brought the humor. And they had such great chemistry with Gal, and because they shared so much screen time together, you need to have that chemistry. So,
no, I agree.
And like you're saying, yes, definitely. I mean, Etta Candy, Lucy Davis, who plays Etta Candy, was great. She also brought a lot of the comedy as well, too. And it's just, you know, Gal, I mean, she was hilarious. You know, and there was a lot of parts there where, you know, she's on man's land, she doesn't know what she's doing, but it was so funny, you know? So there's a lot of elements of this film that made it that was humorous, but because it was humorous, it brought heart, and that's what I loved, and that's something that Batman v Superman seriously missed. You know,
yeah.
Batman v Superman was just brooding, was just gray, not funny. It was just very serious. The editing wasn't done very well, that sort of thing. Where this one had great flow, great editing, great directing, great everything, great cinematography all the way through.
Yeah.
So.
No, I agree wholeheartedly.
Hopefully after this, now that Warner Bros. Sees what works, as well as DC Comics, you know, DC Entertainment sees what works in terms of what they have to do to make a successful film in this, you know, in this industry, and we'll do the same thing with Justice League. And I think that's maybe why they want to do a bunch of reshoots for Justice League, is because they see what elements work for Wonder Woman, and they want to adapt them a little bit into Justice League, perhaps.
Mm.
So,
well, and everything that I'm, all the trailers I'm seeing for Justice League, I mean, they have humor in them. I mean, Bruce's interaction with Barry Allen is hilarious. Mm-hmm. Even his interaction with Aquaman, I hear you can talk to fish. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. That's funny, and
yeah.
Ben Affleck just delivers it with grace and a lot of humor.
Yes.
It's great. I absolutely love it. I mean, and Ben Affleck can play a funny guy. I've seen him do it. So I'm very confident that Justice League is just going to be as good, if not better, than Wonder Woman is going to be.
It's, you know what? I don't know if it'll be better in terms of Rotten Tomatoes or whatever in terms of critics, but in terms of money, it'll probably make more than Wonder Woman will, especially on the opening box office, because it's Justice League, right? I mean, you have the whole entire league that's going to be in it. But
right.
Whether it's going to be better or not in terms of as a film, I don't know. It's going to be hard to beat Wonder Woman right now.
I agree. I mean, it's kind of hard to beat a 94% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
There you go. You know, so, but I think in terms of money and how much money it's going to make, if it's even close to Wonder Woman, then I think it could easily, you know, beat out even the Avengers. So.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, sir, but I'm getting really tired of this Marvel versus DC crap that fanboys are all over. Which is better? Which formula is better? Should DC do what Marvel's been doing?
You know what I like about DC is the fact that, yes, they've kind of started their expanded theatrical universe, just like Marvel has done, but they're kind of doing it their own way. And,
I agree.
You know, everybody says, like, for Batman v Superman, how people don't like and this and that and the other thing. Well, to me, I didn't mind it. And I liked it. It wasn't great, but it was fine. It was good. But what I appreciate is the fact that they didn't do the same thing as Marvel. You know, if you look at, say,
right.
Iron Man or Thor or Captain America, compared to Batman v Superman or, say, Man of Steel, they weren't similar. You know, everything was, cinematography was different, stories were different, things were different, right?
Sure.
So what I appreciate about DC Entertainment, they're not doing the same thing as Marvel.
Only for the fact that as soon as Man of Steel is over, you can pick up in Batman versus Superman basically right where, I mean, it fits into the Man of Steel world so very well. And I mean, and that's Zack Snyder for you.
Right.
I mean, it's a seamless transition between the two films. I mean, you could basically end cap. I mean, you could basically add Batman versus Superman onto the end of Man of Steel, and it would be and it's one seamless film between the two movies.
Well, you know, it's funny they mentioned that because a friend of mine, I remember at work, and we had this conversation regarding Marvel and DC movies, and he was saying that at the end of Man of Steel, okay, either in the, like, say in the post credits, for example, okay, like, you know how Marvel puts these things in the post credits, right? So even
right.
the post credits, if let's say at the end of Man of Steel, you had Bruce Wayne, you know, Ben Affleck, Bruce Wayne come in and do like a cameo or something like that, just as kind of to set up for Batman v Superman. And he said that's what they should have done, to sort of build up the anticipation for the next one and that sort of thing.
See, no, I disagree.
And you know what? I told him the exact same thing, and I told him why. First off, if you remember Man of Steel, there were little Easter eggs, if you look carefully, for example, the satellite, right, where Superman and Zod were fighting, and there was a winged
yep.
satellite. You could tell there's little Easter eggs that this is
I mean,
an
there
expanded
was a,
universe, right?
There was a truck that said LexCorp on
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You can see that this is an expanded universe, right? You don't need to have cameos like,
no,
like they
you
did,
don't.
Like they do in Marvel, right? Where you had the S.H.I.E.L.D. director come in every movie just to show you how expanded their universe is. You
right.
don't need to do that. You just have little Easter eggs. Let the audience pick them out. That's
well,
all you have to
and,
do.
And, you know, I'm going to reiterate something my friend Stephen and your friend Stephen Vaughn have said on multiple occasions to me. He feels that DC fans are smarter than Marvel fans are, because Marvel fans need, like, an overt cameo appearance from a character, whereas DC fans just need the little Easter eggs to understand where it's heading next.
I don't want to agree or disagree to that. The thing is, they just use two different formulas. That's all.
Yeah.
Marvel
no, I agree
uses
with
different
that.
Formula in DC, and Marvel, for example, I mean, if you want a complete obvious show in their formulas, just look at the post credits. Marvel, in every single movie they have, they put something in the post credits. DC does
yep.
not.
No.
Right there.
It was funny. I actually stayed until after, not until all the credits ran through, but I stayed about halfway through,
mm-hmm.
just seeing if Patty was going to put in something via the post credits. they didn't do anything for either Man of Steel or Batman vs. Superman that I remember. Maybe they did one for Batman vs. Superman. I can't remember which.
I don't think they did.
So, I mean, it's obviously not going to be a thing for these DC movies, which I'm fine with. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and they don't have to follow the Marvel formula. And unfortunately, everybody will compare the DC movies versus the Marvel movies till the end of time. Right. So,
well, like I said, I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, they use two different formulas, and I'm fine with that. I mean, I appreciate that DC or Warner Brothers is not using the same formula as Marvel. You know, and I love that about them because they're different. So when people complain that Batman v Superman is not very good, well, it's not that they're not very good. They're just using a different formula than what you're used to seeing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's all
and
it is.
And the fact that DC was able to put out a female superhero on the big screen before Marvel, and it gets high praise indeed mm-hmm. from critics and fans alike.
Agreed.
Shows a lot of balls and guts by Warner Brothers and DC.
But it's funny though, because if you look at Marvel, I don't think they have one character that's as one female character that's as nearly as popular as Wonder Woman. If you go down the line, I know they're trying to. I think they're going to be releasing a Captain Marvel film down the next little while. I'm not sure how many years down the road. But the thing is, Captain Marvel, to her respect, is not as popular as Wonder Woman.
No, it will never be.
Wonder Woman is probably the most popular female superhero on the planet.
Yeah, agreed.
So maybe the reason why Marvel hasn't done so is because they know they don't have a character that's the same quality as Wonder Woman.
Well, it's kind of hard to compete with Wonder Woman at all.
Oh, for sure it is. Absolutely. And like going back to what we were discussing before, how DC doesn't put Easter eggs, right? I mean, another Easter egg that was in this movie, for example, and this might be true or not, but it is very interesting to note that Dr. Maru, her poison that she was using, and you've probably read this somewhere, I'm sure, the poison that she was using could be possible what Bane will be using in the future in a Batman
movie. Oh, Venom, yeah.
Exactly. And that could be a
possibility. A
precursor to what Bane will be using as Venom in the future in a Batman film, right? In the Batman solo film, for example, that'll be coming out probably soon or whenever. So, well, actually, no, it's supposed to be Deathstroke, so maybe the next one. But who knows, right? What all that to say is that it's these little Easter eggs that you can kind of pick out here and there, where Marvel just kind of put some play in your face, and they don't want you even to guess. And the thing about Marvel, it's funny, if you look at all the Marvel movies, okay? If you look at their action scenes and cinematography, and they're great, don't get me wrong, they're very fun and then all that stuff, but that's the thing, they're fun. Where if you, let's say you look at Wonder Woman and you look at No Man's Land, that was beautiful. It wasn't fun, it was gorgeous. It was just, it's such cinematography brilliance. And that's a difference. Marvel, I find, is very bubblegum kind of pop, right? Where DC, you know, for their scenes are more intense, especially the action scenes are much more intense. Now, come Justice League, we'll see if things have changed maybe, but at least in Wonder Woman, and even in Batman v Superman to a certain extent, you can see the action scenes, how different they are compared to Marvel movies.
Right.
Right? They're grittier, they're darker, but they're the picture quality is so much better, I find. Where Marvel is just, like I said, bubblegum pop, I find, at least.
No, agreed. I totally agree with that, you know, and I will be the guy who says that I believe that DC films and DC fans are smarter, because Marvel movies follow a formula, mm-hmm. And Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios, if something does not fit within their formula, they get rid of it. Look at the director for Ant-Man, Edgar Wright. He had an idea of what he wanted Ant-Man to be, and it didn't fit within the Marvel mold, so they got rid of him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you'll ever see DC do that. DC may, I mean, they give their directors creative license to do whatever the crap they want to. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at this director, Patty, what's her face? Patty Jenkins. Patty Jenkins, she was given full license to do whatever the crap she wanted to do with a Wonder Woman origin movie, and she did an amazing job. It's not, and I don't think they've got Jeff Johns, who is the chief creative officer for DC Comics, who is a consultant, either that or an executive producer on all these movies, just to make sure they're following the mold properly,
mm-hmm.
but not so controlling that they out a director because of something they want to do that's a little bit different.
Well, you know what? It's not really fair to say that, because I think DC, to a certain extent, does the same thing. I mean, look at The Flash, for example. I think they've already lost one or two directors off that movie already. Batman, for example, Ben Affleck. I mean, he stepped down as director. You know, maybe it's because it was too much between being the director and the star of the film. I'm not sure. But he had to step down from being director, I believe. So, I mean, it's unfair to say that DC doesn't do that. I mean, I think DC probably does the same to a certain extent. Even Patty Jenkins, like I said, she didn't have complete 100% creative control. She had to fight for No Man's Land. But at least to Warner Brothers' credit or DC Entertainment, they're at least open-minded enough to understand it and to give credit to their directors and to give them a chance to do something, right?
Right.
I mean, if No Man's Land, they filmed it and it didn't work, well, hell, they'll just cut it and put it in. But that's another thing, actually, about this movie, and I completely forgot to mention that, but I read somewhere that there were no deleted scenes that were left on the cutting room floor in this movie, in Wonder Woman.
Really?
None.
That shocks me to death. Oh my gosh,
so
really?
If you're looking for an extended version of this movie, you will not find one after this. That's
what I've
read, yes. So
That is just a huge credit to Patty Jenkins.
For sure. Where if you look at Batman v Superman, well, how much of that was cut? So,
a lot. I mean, a huge amount of it was cut, and the pacing was off because of all the cuts that it had. So, I mean,
for sure.
That's just a credit to the creative team behind this Wonder Woman film. I mean, that says leaps and bounds about the creative team behind this film. I mean, Patty Jenkins, the writers, the entire creative team, you know, I mean, that
definitely
just says a lot. So,
yep, definitely. No, I mean, I think Patty Jenkins did a great job, and I'm glad she's going to be on for her second one. You know, there is somehow, and I saw this article, I didn't quite read it though, but there was talk that she was trying to figure out a way to bring back Steve Trevor for a second one or something. I don't know how that's going to work.
How would you do that? I mean,
I don't know.
He died back in 1918.
Maybe in a flashback or something.
Perhaps, I'm not sure.
We'll see, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see the second one, how, because the second one's going to be a little more interesting, right? Because it's going to somehow tie, I'm assuming so, to the present Justice League movies and that sort of thing. So it's going to be fun to see how that's tied in together.
I think you may see Diana coming to the U.S., as opposed to being in London.
It is going to take place in the U.S., yes.
So, I mean, that should be interesting. Because, I mean, Steve Trevor was a U.S. operative. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a British operative or anything like that. So, I don't know. It should be interesting for a sequel. I mean, they wrapped up this film so completely that they didn't really leave it open for a sequel.
Well, I mean, this was just an origin story, right? I mean, you saw
right.
how they started the movie with kind of like present, and then went to the past, and then went back to present again, right? So, I mean, yeah, I mean, you can't really get a sequel from this specific movie because it's a standalone, right? It's all it is.
Right.
It's a standalone movie. You can't get a sequel from this unless you continue after what happened she did after World War One, but that would just be silly. But I can see the next one, it's not really going to be attached to this one, except maybe Steve Trevor, and the Amazons, of course, right? Because you got to see her island and the mascara and that sort of thing. So I can see how that's going to be maybe adapted to the next one.
I mean, I think you're probably going to see the death of Hippolyta in the second one, and Wonder Woman taking over the leadership The actual Amazons?
I don't think so. I think it'd be kind of silly. Yeah, I don't think so. But it's gonna be kind of interesting to see who the villain is in the next one, considering they've already used Ares now. So.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't a lot of Wonder Woman villains. They could do Dr. Psycho, which would be cool.
I think Cheetah would be the best one. And Cheetah's—it's like one for—it's like the Joker to Batman, right? I mean, it would be silly not to use Cheetah in some way.
I think an introduction to Cheetah maybe in the second one would
or
be.
Or maybe an introduction to Cheetah would be in the Justice League movie.
Perhaps, yeah.
There you go.
See, I'm not overly familiar with. I mean, I know who Cheetah is, but I mean, there's several different incarnations of Cheetah that I can't really. I'm not familiar with the character enough to say one way or the other which version of Cheetah that I like the best. And like I said, I love Wonder Woman, but I don't know a lot about Wonder Woman. So,
right.
I mean, this podcast journey is me discovering. I mean, I've read a little bit about the George Perez version of the Wonder Woman.
Right.
To realize that it's my favorite version of the character. But I still haven't read a lot of it. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, I from what I know about Wonder Woman and Cheetah, it's mainly from, like I said, the animated TV shows, right? I mean,
right.
I've read a little bit of Wonder Woman, but not as much as I've watched on
right.
cartoons and that sort of thing. So,
yeah, I'm
I know
the
Cheetah,
same place.
As far as I know about Cheetah, I think she was like a long-time friend of Diana's, and then I think
I believe she was an Amazon.
I believe she
was an Amazon that turned evil, but I'm not positive.
I don't think so. I think she was a friend. She was a scientist or something like that, and then she was on some sort of like archaeological expedition. And
oh yeah, that
got
could be.
Somehow taken over with some sort of entity or something and became Cheetah.
Yeah.
And I'm usually right, so you should just take what I'm saying to truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said yep, sucker, you got it recorded.
Yeah. Well, We shall see. But I just have a couple of feedback things to read on this episode. A couple of comments on the website that I got all the way back in. I got one back in April of 2016 and the one more recently on May 11th of 2017. This one comes from, let's see, Courage. I can't even read that. Okay, Courage Dearest Heart says, love your podcast, wanted to encourage you to keep with it. We need more Wonder Woman in this world. You are correct, sir, or madam. I don't know which you are. But thank you for the encouragement. This podcast is coming back over a year later after you posted on my website. So thank you. And this next one comes from Wayne Moses. I'm a big fan of the animated cartoons and comics in popular culture and TVs, films, comics, and animation throughout the world. Thanks for the info. No problem, sir. I, as well, is a huge fan of the animated cartoons with Wonder Woman in it. Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, Young Justice, which is getting season 3, which I cannot wait for. I think that's going to do it for this episode of Wonder Woman. Danny, thank you so much for joining us, buddy.
And a problem, man. Anytime.
Anytime. Well, I may hold you to that.
All right. It certainly doesn't hurt your downloads to have me on the show. I'm just saying.
Plus you always get that. You need that podcast, it's scratched, you can always come on here.
Yeah, I kind of do, I'm not going to lie. It's, you know, I haven't recorded a podcast in years, I think. And, you know, it's one of those things where you just need to find the right topic to talk about. You know, it's something that you're passionate about, that you want to discuss, that you want to educate listeners on, or maybe, or just something to vent, as we've done so many times.
Yes, indeed.
But you know, just something to talk about, and it's because I mean, as you know, when it comes to a podcast, it takes a lot of editing, it takes a lot of time, and sometimes money. You know what I mean? So you want, if you're going to do something, you want to do something that's you're passionate about, something that you enjoy doing. So to find that, and, you know, I'm not going to lie, after the New 52 of Supergirl, I kind of lost a lot of that because, as you remember, the New 52 Supergirl kind of ended, was not very good. Right. A lot of it, I think the last few months we recorded the Carousel podcast, it was rough going. So
well, and let's be honest, the New 52 Supergirl was your catapult into your comics. Was it not?
It was. It certainly was. But, you know, even after that, and I'm glad you got a TV show and stuff like that, and I enjoyed the first season, but not so much the second, but that's another story for another day. But, you know, it's weird because Supergirl's one of those things where it's always been a hit and miss. You know, like it's either been great or not. So,
Right. But,
you know, it's hard when something you're passionate about, but the product isn't there. It just is not very good, and it kind of demoralizes you a bit. And
I agree.
You just don't really feel like, you know, talking about it anymore and stuff like that. So, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
But at least
we've
got
to
do that. So, yeah.
I kind of feel the same way, and that's kind of why I've been gone as long as I have. Because like we were talking about before the show started, you know, I've been a little disenfranchised with DC Comics over the past probably year. I mean, especially with this season of Supergirl, it just was not good. You know, I just became very disenfranchised with DC Comics, because if they can allow such a great show as season one that was to be downtrodden into crap, you know, it's disheartening and doesn't make me very excited as a fan.
Right.
So, and that's probably the main reason why I haven't been podcasting. And my apologies again to all you listeners out there, because it's not your fault, and it's not the material's fault. It's just I have had no passion for comics up until recently with the release of the new Wonder Woman film. So my passion for this character seems to be reinvigorated, and I plan on doing a lot more with this show, which I am so excited for. So.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
There is that. Did you want to plug anything before we wrap up this show, sir?
I mean, I'm not working on anything in terms of podcasting right now. I mean, as I mentioned before, I am a writer of DC Comics News. So if any of you know that webpage or visit it often, because we do a lot of reviews and news and that sort of thing. So, yeah, look for me on DCComicsNews.com. I usually do the reviews for Green Lanterns and Suicide Squad, which has been awesome, by the way, as well as Supergirl and Teen Titans, which isn't so great. But I've been doing a lot of reviews for those as well as some news. So, but in terms of podcasting, I mean, I'm hoping to get back to podcasting again one day. I'm just kind of in the middle of kind of a moving out of my place right now. So once things kind of quiet down a bit, I mean, for example, just when you're podcasting tonight, I had to go into my storage that I have over there, all my stuff packed in, and pull out my headset to record this podcast. So that gives you an idea of where my state of mind is right now. But but I do plan on recording podcasts again. I don't think it's going to be Supergirl specific anymore, but I think it will simply just be DC Comics in general.
Or just
a general podcast about just anything. I'm not sure yet, but we'll see.
Well, as you know, you are welcome back on this show and any of my shows anytime, sir.
Thank you.
I think that's going to do it for us. Next time, we're going to be looking at Wonder Woman number 2 for the 87 series as well as the 2006 series. So stay tuned for that. That should be coming, hitting your podcast feeds next Friday. But until then, thank you so much for listening. And just for old time's sake, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Danny.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later.
Bye, guys.
See ya.